like it doesn't show the nose. You can get like the sun is so nice.
Okay. Okay. I need to first of all thank you for those that came. We, my wife and I.
We had to because of the donuts, Rabbi.
Yeah, which donuts?
All the donuts we ate. We had to come.
We. I'm like wondering. I was wondering where was I? I missed them. But the truth be told, that really we don't do shiurim really during the week. And my wife and I, we've discussed it. We have made a decision. We're not going to do a Hanukkah shiur this year. Because the women, it's very hard for women to get out during the week. And Shabbos, in the summer, when there's a lot of noise at home, everyone's very happy to leave and come out. But there were some people that had requested there should be a shiur. I honestly thought it'd be four or five people. And I said, we'll do it. People want it. I felt, Baruch Hashem, there's more than that. So taking out time and coming during the week is very impressive. I know it's very hard to get out, but I'm glad my wife doesn't have to leave the house to go to a shiur tonight. And she didn't have to leave ahead of time and look for parking. It was close enough, Baruch Hashem. The few minutes that we have, I want to share with you perhaps something that will, A, give us the proper appreciation for Hanukkah, and B, realize that Hanukkah is not just given to us for 8 days. Hanukkah is given us, the gift of Hanukkah, as a survival to get us through the entire year. And I'm going to explain to you what I mean. In contrast to every other Yom Tov we have, all our Yom Tovim are on the half a year that's warm and sunny. Think about it. Very interesting. Pesach to Sukkot has all our Yom Tovim. All our Yom Tovim are celebrated during the day, with an exclusion of Pesach, which is some and some. Hanukkah is our only winter Yom Tov. It's cold. The longest nights of the year. The mitzvah is at night. It's a work day. Some people struggle why it's called a Yom Tov altogether. Think about it. Kids go to school. Well, that's why parents think it's a Yom Tov. But, you know, the only Yom Tov it is for parents really is that kids have school. But if you think about it, people go to work. It's a regular day. It's a very strange Yom Tov. There's no prohibition about going to work. Even Purim. You're not supposed to go to work. There's a Chiyuv Suda. Hanukkah has nothing as far as Chiyuv Yom Tov goes. The Mishabur brings down, if you want, you can have a little party and you can sing to Hashem, and that's a mitzvah, which it's always a mitzvah. You know, so the Hasidim take it very seriously. The Litvishers say, all right, you know, for a few, everyone has their own, you know, everyone takes it their own way. But there's no halacha that you need to have a suda. There is no halacha that you need to eat donuts. There's no such halacha. It is brought down halacha that oily foods is good, but we do that all year. Most of us. And the ones that don't eat on Hanukkah either, right? The Whole Foods people go to Whole Foods on Hanukkah too. So the truth is, what exactly makes this a Yom Tov for us? And besides that the Yom Tov is a workday Yom Tov, there's something else very major to it. It was really their last major miracle before we went into Galus. This is really the jetpack that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us before we went into this long Galus. So Hanukkah is this, specifically this dark, cold, workday Yom Tov that we need to find the light in it and the iron in it to get us through the entire year. We are living now in an era called Ikvasa de Mashiach. Ikvasa de Mashiach, if you look at Chazal, they speak very, very sadly about this period of time before Mashiach comes. Although, if you take a look at it, it's fair to say that we're having less oppression from our neighbors than the Jews had 50 years ago, even 100 years ago, 150 years ago. So what's so sad about this last period of time? If I may say, I think the Jews are living better today than they lived 100 years ago in Russia or 75 years ago in Europe. I think it's a fair comment. So what's so sad about this time? And I want to tell you what's so sad. Right now, you know, the Kloisenberger Rebbe once said a statement. I don't remember the exact words. He says, in Europe, they killed us for being Jews. In America, they kill us so we don't want to be Jews. Which he meant to say something very, very deep. that what's happening today is this an oppression from within. It's not our neighbors that are hounding us. We're suffering our own personal oppression. There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of tsaris. There's a lot of illness. There's a lot of sadness. And it takes a toll on people. You talk to people and they say, oh, we heard something else and something else. And I feel like there's a lot of despair. People are very frustrated and people are very, like, if I could use the word disconnected. Disconnected doesn't only mean from Hashem. It means from relationships and from... People are rolling through. I think there's a very sad element to Ikvus of the Mashiach that it's not our enemies that are attacking us. It's we're missing something. Most of the world's problems today, which we're not going to go into now, addictions and depression, there's so much. The root of all these problems are is that there's a disconnect, there's an unhappiness, there's a sadness. I'll use the word despair that Ikvus of the Mashiach brings, and I want to expound on that and explain to you the chizuk you can walk out with after Hanukkah. With such, to infuse your lives with such joy in a world, if I may say, in a very depressed world. People have more money than ever. People should be having much more time than ever. It's not showing up. Why? Think about what your grandmother, we speak about this all the time, needed to do for a loaf of bread. Everything's so easy and so convenient, but yet it's not quite doing the trick. So I want to share with you what we can do. You know, the Chafetz Chaim has such an amazing Dvar Torah. Everybody knows in the Beis HaMikdash there were so many incredible kelim. And somehow, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to figure out how to make all of them. There was only one he couldn't figure out. The Shulchan, look at these kelim, they were all, oh, easy, easy. The Menorah, he says, Hashem, I can't do it. I ask you, he couldn't do it? All the other things, he physically couldn't make it. All the other kelim he was able to make, there was a lot more detail in many of the other kelim. They needed nets. Out of gold. I mean, you look at the other kelim. What was so overwhelming to Moshe Rabbeinu he couldn't get? And somehow Hashem solved the issue for him. And this is the secret of the menorah that I'm going to share with you tonight. Says the Hilik HaChafetz Chaim. You know what it was? Moshe Rabbeinu turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, the menorah represents the light of Klal Yisrael. There was one light in the menorah that always burned, right? The Ner HaMaravi. It represented that Klal Yisrael will always shine. And Moshe Rabbeinu listened to Hashem about the menorah. He says, this menorah will always shine. And Moshe Rabbeinu was able to see crusades, inquisition, Holocaust. He says, Hashem, this doesn't make sense. I can't. What does this mean? Klal Yisrael is going to have an eternal light. And Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu, take my word for it. Klal Yisrael will do well, will survive, and will be a light no matter how hard it gets. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't swallow that. And Hashem says, Moshe, I will prove it to you. He takes a menorah, a block with nothing, and he throws it into fire. And what comes out? The most magnificent menorah. And Hashem says, Moshe Rabbeinu, this is the secret of Klal Yisrael. You can throw them into a fire. And not only do they not come out worse, they come out stronger and better. This is, the Chafetz Chaim says, what Moshe Rabbeinu learned. We don't get burnt by fire. We get stronger by fire. When we have our challenges, I don't mean physical fire, but when you get thrown your challenges, are we supposed to get broken by them? Or do we get rejuvenated and stronger from these challenges? This was the lesson HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu. Incredible. So I want to expound a little bit. What does it mean, the light? This is the light. The menorah represents a light that shines no matter how difficult the situation is. So with that, I need to explain you how the menorah fights Yavon. Everyone knows Yavon is Greece. Chazal say in Parshas Bereishis, it says the word Chayshech. What does Chayshech mean? Darkness, very famous. You've all heard this Chazal, most likely. Chayshech zu Yavon. Greece represents darkness. Now, I need to tell you, if you go through history, the nation that might have attributed much of the world's chachma today is what? Is Greece. The Greeks have had the world's greatest chachma have come from Greece. We quote the Rishonim, they quote Aristotle and many other. It's called the Chachma Yavon. The Ramban quotes the Chachma Yavon all the time. What does it mean that they represent darkness? So I want to share with you something you need to understand. Darkness means when you cannot see something. When your eyes are covered, it's called darkness. You can be a starving person. sitting, you haven't eaten in 3 days, and you're in touch with death almost. And you're in this big room that has thousands of trays of food. But what if the room is pitch black and you have no idea that there's food there? What's all that food going to do for you? Nothing. The room is dark, nothing. You have a poor person who's desperate for a few dollars, can be sitting in a room with jewels and diamonds. And what happens when it's dark? It's there. The diamonds are there. But if their eyes are covered, if there's darkness, then what's it worth? Darkness is when a person does not see their potential. When a person does not see the hope. When a person has no vision, he lives in Chayshach. When a person sees what's here and doesn't see what could be, what will be, what their potential is, that is the darkness Yovan put into the world. And I would like to explain this to you. Someone who sees endless in front of them, who sees hope, will never get depressed. Depression is one thing and one thing only. When a person resigns themselves to their fate, that's depression. Finished. This is my life. You talk to people sometimes that are going through very difficult times, and they say, this is what my life is going to be. That person is depressed. Why is that person depressed? Because they decided this is what the person is going to be. Obviously, again, there are other details that go in, but I'm talking about on a pashut level, when a person has a depression that just comes from they just gave up, that, Rahman al-Itzlan, is because there's a chayshik, there's a darkness of what's going to be. How did the Greeks do this to us? The Greeks said the following. There's something called nature. Nature is magnificent. They took nature and they turned it into the greatest obstacle. You know what they said? You are a product of nature. You are created, and that's who you are. They did not believe in the concept that a person can transcend and become bigger. They believed in people that were born with natural strength were greater. People that possessed physical beauty were greater. That was their belief. Those are things you cannot change. They valued things that you cannot change. A person cannot become more beautiful. You can try, you can attempt. I know it's a billion-dollar industry. I shouldn't get up and just wipe it like that. But I'm talking about, at the end of the day, there are people that are born with much greater beauty, strength. You can spend your whole life in the gym. Let me tell you something. I have these little, small, scrawny friends. They go to the gym. I always tell them, you're a great guy, but I assure you, you're not bench pressing 400. Give it up. The barbells are bigger than you are. Just give it up. In Greece, for those of you that know your little history, these people were casted aside. The Olympics started with terrible competition. I've spoke about that in previous years. I'm not going into that tonight. They also used our fire to represent the Olympics, which was terrible. They used physical fire. Physical fire destroys as it lights. Spiritual fire doesn't destroy. So they promoted some by killing others. I once had the opportunity to talk about how the Greeks stole our fire and tried to pretend that that's good fire. And fire that destroys others is never kosher. And they need to burn oil, physical fire. And we have spiritual oil, which has no... That's why the Nes of Hanukkah was that it didn't burn. It didn't destroy anything. Hashem made it burnt and the oil didn't burn. That's real fire, but that's not for tonight. But what they said was, this is who you are. Sadly, we have a lot of Greek philosophy in our psychology today. And there's some of that in that as well. You need to know as an Orthodox Yid, you need to understand that a lot of what they say is that this is who you are. You're in a hopeless cause, it's chas v'shalom. All of that is pure kfira. Obviously, we're not going to take on that topic now either. At least we'll cover tonight what we're not talking about, okay? I should be able to... No, but really, it's something you need to realize that there's a lot of things that are really not kosher in the idea that people are resigned to their fate that's responsible for a lot of what's going on today. Chalila v'chas. It's a world full of hope and siyata d'shmai. But that being said, what was the first thing the Greek attacked? Milo. What's the big deal with Milo? Why were they so... Circumcision was so... Very simple. Circumcision shows that nature is not perfect. You take a person that's born who they said is perfect, and what do? You say, no, it's not perfect. We're going to perfect it. What does Mila resemble? It's a symbolism, looking to Rishonim, to take desire of man and show we have control over it. We have control over our taivus, over our desires. It is the antithesis to their philosophy, mamish. They say, no, if a person's possessed desire, that's what it is. That's his fate. You know, the people that are created like that, Rachmana Litzlan, to that whole thought process. They didn't believe in the ability to become better, to rejuvenate, which is why they didn't like Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh either, because Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh are both about rejuvenating, starting over. That whole concept was out. Okay, so the first half of what I need to share with you is as follows. Is Yiyush. Yiyush is despair, which I might have mentioned in the past. Reb Tzadik HaKayin says that the test before Mashiach comes, what's going to be the last battle? He says it won't be a physical oppression. It's going to be the oppression of Yiyush. People are going to give up. There's going to be a feeling, he says, you're going to walk the streets and people are just going to be like, whatever, just let it go. And he says that is the worst. And he says a Yid has no right ever to come to that idea, because we're always in the hands of Hashem. So that's one side of this coin that I want to share with you. And the Chashmonaim, we'll see in a minute, were 13 people against how many? Anyone know how big the Greek army was? We can't even count. Think about the opposite of despair. 13 people see hundreds of thousands of soldiers coming. What do they say? We can do it. You might say they're crazy, right? I would. Imagine they came to ask you advice. We're 13 people. There's a few hundred thousand soldiers. Should we go take them on? Mind you, know what these 13 people look like? You know, they're called Maccabees. So people think of the basketball team in Eretz Israel. I assure you, the Maccabees knew what these 13 Jews looked like. They changed the name of their team. I assure you. These were 13 Rabbanim with long beards, probably limped, definitely had, from learning a lot, probably had their backs bent like this. I want to make sure we don't, there's not 13 people with Uzis and machine guns. I want to make sure everyone gets the picture of this war over here. They weren't shooting from, you know, snipers shooting. Okay, so 13 against a few hundred thousand. You know, they had the advantage, they had the height. Trust me, this was made no sense. Now I want to share with you for a second the other side of the coin of hopelessness. Chas v'shalom, a Yid goes through a difficult time. They get diagnosed with an illness. They have no parnasa. They have a challenge like that. Again, human nature is despair. Chas v'shalom, the doctors said this number. Financial, the market is down. Your home is this. And you have all the cheshbonos why the statistics tell us that it's against you. The second half we need to realize is sha'asa nisim laviseinu v'yamahem zmanazeh. Second reason there's no despair is, one is because you're unlimited. The second one is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unlimited. And we believe in nisim. We believe we are not people of statistics. No statistics fit with who we are. Not our survival, not the fact that there's a Klal Yisrael today. And Baruch Hashem, as many stories we hear about tragedy, about illness, we hear these crazy stories where doctors come in and say, we cannot explain this medically. I can tell you, here in the shul, we focus on this a lot. In the last few weeks, I've said a number of stories that I've heard firsthand or secondhand, one after the other, how we don't work with rules. It just never does. Last week, there's someone here in Boston who lost their grandfather. A man here in Boston, his grandfather was 101 years old. 101. Pretty good? Okay. In 1960, you do the math how long ago. How long ago was 1960? 57 years? He was diagnosed with stomach cancer, and he was given 6 months. 1960. The doctor died three times over already. Tell your story. I heard this from his grandson this week. I couldn't believe my ears. In 1960, 6 months. You can do the math, okay? This is who we are. How does it work? One of my favorite stories that I always say over is Reb Shmuel Birnbaum, who had a heart attack 35 years before he died. And the doctors gave him 6 months. 6 months. But he had the chutzpah, as I say, to look at the doctor. When the doctor said he was only 6 months, he asked the doctor, nope. Doctor, how many times in your life were you wrong? The doctor says, never. Mm-hmm. Never off by more than 3 months. He says, how many years are you a doctor? He says, 40 years. He goes, doctor, today is your first time. He looked the doctor square in the eye. And the doctor says, how could you say it? He says, because God's in charge. And the doctor was like, and guess what? He outlived, I heard the story from one of the family members, he outlived that doctor by about 25 years. So don't start up with these people. Okay. Anyway, the point I'm making is, this is the point. We can do things out of the ordinary, which is a reason why we could never give up on our end. And then there's a second side of the coin, is what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is endless and has nisim, and we can't give up. I'd like to show you now how these two are connected. And you only get the second half if you do the first half. We only get HaKadosh Baruch Hu to respond to us out of the ordinary with nisim if we do out of the ordinary. And I want to share this with you. It's a concept an absolutely magnificent concept. So again, as I mentioned to you, we know the nace happened of the war through the Kohanim. I want to tell you something interesting. We also attribute the nace of the oil to the Kohanim. We say in Haneris Halalu, Ayidei Kohanecha. And the Mepharshim asks, what does this have to do with the Kohanim? Why is the miracle of the oil attributed to the Kohanim? And I want to tell you the answer to this question. The Medrash tells us, how did the miracle happen of the Kohanim, of the Hanukkah? It says, the Matisyahu Kohen Gadol turned to the Chashem Noyim and said the following. I have 3 sons, you have 7 sons. Makes 12 with Elazar, with 13, we're going to go. And these are his words. And I guarantee you, is when he turned to the 12, he said, we're going to have miracles and we're going to win. This is what Chazal tells us. And there's so many questions on this Chazal. You're not allowed to depend on miracles. Are you allowed to take people into war depending on a miracle? No. As a matter of fact, there's a Safra in Parshas Emor that says, if a person goes into a mysterious nefesh saying, Hashem is going to save me, he won't get saved. But who's the proof to that? Haran. Remember Haran went in, he said, I'm going to get saved. So the question is, how was he so sure that they were going to win? So I want to share with you what the Netziv tells us. The Netziv writes that after we got to Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, V'yisam li mamleches kehanim v'gai kadosh. I want you please to listen to this. It's not just a vart, this is a yisayit for life. And we're standing here days that we ask Hashem, yaser lanu nisim. The only time of the year we ask Hashem for nisim. The only time of the year. If you forget Al Nisim, you say Harachim on Yaslan or Nisim. And the place can say, because Chanukah, days you're allowed to ask for Nisim. And I want to explain to you why we can do that only 8 days a year. Don't squander. That's why I made this share the first night. It's not fair when you get up the last night of Yantiv and you tell people, you know what you could have done the last 8 days? And don't worry about it. Not about 350 days, you can do it again. Don't worry. It's not fair to people. So you have to talk about this the first day. I want to tell you the days. This is in full of Sefer Kodesh. If you're Sfardi, Ashkenazi, Hasidim, I'll tell you who you should look at. It's across the board. Everyone agrees it's 8 days of tremendous Nisan. What's the secret over here? He tells them we're going to win. Says the Netziv, after Mount Torah, Hashem says you are going to be Mamleches Kehanim, the Goy Kodesh. He says that's not the two things, that's a choice. Hashem tells Klal Yisrael these words. You can either be Mamleches Kehanim, which he proves means you'll go, you'll do the regular thing, and I'll respond regularly with nature. Or you'll be Goy Kodesh, which means you will go above nature, and then I will reciprocate above nature. It's a choice. Incredible. It's not free. We get to decide our relationship with Hashem. Listen to an incredible Netziv. The Netziv says that after the eagle, Moshe Rabbeinu screams, Mil Hashem Elai. Everyone knows that famous thing? And who comes over? Just shave it, lady. Ask the Netziv, where's everybody else? Most of the Klal Yisrael didn't do the eagle. How come the whole Klal Yisrael didn't come? And he answers the following. He was going to ask Yidden to kill Yidden that didn't have a desire. He says, this was a risking lives. These people are going to kill back. No one's going down. Oh, you want to kill me? Sure. I'll step to the side so you can. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu was nervous if the Yidden are going to get killed. And he's going to end up killing innocent people. So he says these words, says the Netziv, Mil Hashem Elai. Who is someone who fights their Yetzirah above Teva? That I could be assured that you'll go out to war and you will be saved because Hashem is going to reciprocate above Teva and I know you'll survive. You understand how these two Netzivs are so beautifully together? That means the Netziv says, and I saw this pshat explained how the Kehanim were so sure that they're going to win. They went into this saying, we are right now fighting our nature, and I'll explain what they fought. Based on that, Matisyahu turns to 12 people around him and says, I guarantee we're going to win the Greeks. How could you say that? Because the Netziv tells us that if you fight your nature, what happens? Because Baruch Hu reciprocates with Nisim. This is the secret to miracles. What was their nature that they fought? So you need to know the little history. Do you know that for years the Kohanim were very lax? When the Greeks were in control, the Kohanim, the Bach writes in Hilchos Chanukah, the Kohanim were not doing the malacha, they were very lazy. And when this whole thing happened, they girded themselves up and they said, we used to wake up late, we used to be lazy, we are going to fight our nature and pull this all together, is what the priest can tell us. And based on that behavior, they were 100% sure that what was going to happen, that they were going to win. What an incredible insight. We talk about miracles, nisim. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want from us? This is why we attribute all this to the Kohanim. They went ahead and took their, they were lethargic, they were lazy, they fought that Yetzirah. And he said, we're going to fight what we naturally want to do, how we naturally want to be, and what happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu reciprocated with what? I will go ahead and I will treat you supernatural. This is how they were so sure they won. This past Shabbos, I shared a story. Two Shabbos ago, don't think anyone was here. If you were, I apologize. But I wanted to bring out this story. The story was said over. The reason why it's such an incredible story, and I'm saying this over as a chizuk, but I want you to know that I would only say the story because it's such a chiddush of a story that a Yidden at Yisrael, Tzimai Zilberberg, who is a manik of thousands of Yidden, he said over the story publicly. And he knows the person firsthand, so I feel comfortable sharing you the story. That's how amazing the story is. In a nutshell, there was a couple in Eretz Yisrael that was going through infertility. And it was after 10 years of trying everything, and the doctor calls them in for a meeting, a firm doctor. So they need to have a conversation with you. He says, okay. He says, sadly, this time around, you're not going to have children. Don't waste any more money. Don't subjugate yourself to this humility anymore. Please do me a favor. I'm telling you, it's just not happening. That was from a doctor who believes. The guy said, medically, there's nothing to do. You can't imagine what shattered. I don't have to expound on that. Beyond shattered, this couple, their dreams, their hopes, their visions, down. Okay. Story goes a week later, the doctor gets a phone call from the seat and says, Doc, how are you doing? Very upbeat. And the doctor's like, okay, you know. Yeah. He says, I'm making a seum in my house and I'd love you to attend. So the doctor says, listen, he's probably never going to make a bris. He's never going to make a bar mitzvah. He's never going to, you know, sometimes you're nervous. You go to one, you got to go to all. He says, okay, it's a seum. He's not going to call me to any other simchas. I'll go. When is it? 7 o'clock in my house. Please come. He comes. The doctor comes in. There's a couple of family, friends are there. Doctor turns and says, what's your seum on? What do you mean? He says, Doc, I'll explain it in a few minutes. It's like, what's the secret, you know? You shouldn't have been learning it. You don't make a seum on something you're embarrassed that you learn, usually. So he says, probably turns to the doctor and says, can I ask you for a request? The doctor says, okay. He says, could you get up and announce the prognosis that you gave me last week in the office? The doctor says, are you? No. He says, could you do me a favor? He says, no. He says, just get up and just tell everybody that we're not having kids. We're finished. We're hoping. And the doctor tries, finally tells the doctor, could you do me one favor? You gave me this terrible news. Just, this is the last thing I want from you. Doctor gets up, I have to tell you, he's stuttering, he's purple, he's red, he's embarrassed, he's looking down, and he's like, I have to tell you that this couple is not having children. And he sits down. No one clapped. No one, it wasn't that kind of situation. It was very morbid. And he sits down. Fellow gets up and he says, so now I want to share with you my siyum. He says, today my wife and I are celebrating a siyum on the Sechtes Hishtadlus. What does Hishtadlus mean? Everyone here knows. He says, today we're making a siyum on that. And we are starting the Sechtes Neis. This is what he said. He says, at this point we're doing nothing. We're waiting for a Neis. And I call to tell everyone that we finished Era 1. We're starting Era 2. Says Rabbi Silverberg, 10 months after that story, at that very table, there was a bris. 10 months later. I'm telling you a story, who it was and who said it, so you should understand. It's a difficult story, but this is the facts. 10 months later, there's a celebrated bris at that very same room, and the doctor was there. I can't imagine what he felt like, but anyway, he was there. I don't think he was asked to speak this time. I think his speech was over. But to make a long story short, I'll tell you my interpretation of the story. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted this person to do something supernatural. He threw him in a pit and he took away the rope from him. What should have been a normal Taba response? Is that guy entitled to Yish? Do we grant this couple they can have a despair? They told him don't come back for anything? What did Hashem want? Hashem said, I need to see you go above your nature. That's what I want to see. These people succeeded and HaKadosh Baruch Hu reciprocated with the Neis. That's how I see the story. The interpretation is my own. But the story, you can take the story however you want it. That's what this story tells me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes needs us to break our teva. There's no easy street. Everyone knows there's a famous chazal that says that the night of Pesach, Klal Yisrael ate the carbon Pesach. How could he eat out of Eretz Yisrael? So the Targum Yonison says that Hashem picked them up with an eagle, took them into Eretz Yisrael the night before they left Mitzrayim. They ate carbon Pesach and then he brought them back out. What's the obvious question everyone's bothered by? It's so economical, just leave them there. Says the Gary Rabbi, no, you don't get into Eretz Yisrael that way. You need to do it with a fight. You need to break nature. We don't go in on eagles. That's not how we ever work. This is where we are zeichet to things, only with a battle, with a fight. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us these nisyanos. This is what he wants to see. Could we go? I heard something magnificent from Rav Dessler. It's worth coming just for what I'm going to tell you now. Don't leave right after this, but it really is just worth it for this. Rav Dessler has a very simple question. There was an Akedah Yitzchak in Har Moriah, right? Forever and ever, what's Har Moriah? Are you allowed to walk on Temple Mount? No. It's Kodesh forever. Yet Har Sinai? What happened after Har Sinai? Hashem gave it to her. What happens next? He says, Hashem says, when I blow the shofar, animals can come grazing back on. You ever thought about that? It's a magnificent question. Good question? Serge Rav Dessler, listen to this. You know the difference? On Har Moriah, someone was Meiser Nefesh. Someone was about to shecht their kid, and someone broke their nature, and that sanctified it forever. Har Sinai, we did nothing. Hashem came down. Easy come, easy go. Hashem leaves us. Animals can walk on it. It wasn't conquered by man. It wasn't broken upon. You know how you break ground? The Rav Dessler, if you like it as much as I did, it was worth coming. Unbelievable. He says, what's it worth? Har Sinai is great, as long as Hashem's on it. Hashem goes, it's back up. This is what we're here for. We're here to understand that when we get thrown into a fire, there's never chas v'shalom, room for yish. Why? Hashem says, look what will come out of the fire. Magnificent menorah that's still shining till today in every Jewish home tonight. This is what we're here for. Hi, this happens every time. We're going to have to skip a little bit and tie things. So you understand how the Netziv explains how it's two sides of the same coin? That when we agree and feel we can go out of the ordinary, what's Hashem's response? Okay, I can go out of the ordinary for you. This is what we need. So going back to Yavon, what's the choshech of Yavon? The choshech of Yavon is black. It's a picture that says this is what it is. Imagine how a Greek doctor would respond to such a prognosis. You're hopeless. Imagine if Roman Sarah. Imagine they would have gone to a Greek doctor. Chas v'shalom. Sarah had no womb, Chazal tell us. She was missing a piece. It wasn't just that she couldn't conceive. She literally was missing the body part you needed. She had no womb. Chazal said, in love lot. That's exactly who we come from, by the way. Avram couldn't have kids. Sarah couldn't get kids. Welcome to all of us sitting here tonight. That's who we are. All the others had to go through these issues. Yitzhak didn't have children right away. Yaakov had children, but he had his other hardships. Why? Why so hard? This is the Ur that comes out of Avram. This is the Ur that comes out of Yitzhak. This is the Ur that comes out of Yaakov. We need to realize that we're painted a picture in the world we live in of darkness. I once used this example of a theater. The story goes in the 1930s when people didn't realize. So theaters were a projection, right? There was a screen, there was a projection. What's the goal of a movie? Of a film, to get you so engrossed and involved that you feel like you're part of it. You cry, you laugh. A fellow was so amazed. Everyone's watching. He says, why is everyone sitting in the dark? And he goes there and he turns on the light. What do you think happened? Guess, was there any more images? What happened? Because it only works in the darkness. It's fake. The minute you turn on the lights, all those images are gone. That's the world we live in. It's one big Hollywood. We're shown this, we're shown that. We read statistics. Statistics! Which Jew opens up statistics? Are we crazy? Do we really think we're bound by the medical journals? Where's our emuna? Medical journals do not dictate anything. There is statistics, there's science, there's plenty of majority of the world that works for. Klal Yisrael doesn't work with statistics. I want you to know, I'm going to have to skip a little bit. But imagine, how impressed are you when there's an ace? What's your response when you hear about an ace? You go, psh, amazing, right? To me, according to this Netziv, means that every time a Yid breaks his nature, Hashem makes that same psh on the other side. Because that's what the Netziv says. Hashem goes, psh, wow! And he responds, imagine. I don't know anyone here has a problem with getting up in the morning. I know people that have that issue. Shacharis, there's a choice. Get up, don't get up for Shacharis. And a Yid goes ahead and can go ahead and break that nature. We, as Yidin, there's so many nisyonos we have all the time. I don't know, a fellow tells me he was at a meeting a business meeting, and they were serving steaks, he says, the size of cows. Every single person. And all of a sudden they announce, anyone getting a kosher meal? He says, yeah, me. And the person brought a tuna fish sandwich that started reeking already when the person walked in. It was frozen and defrosted. It looked like an airplane meal on ground. And the person says, it was hard. I said, of course it was hard. Nature says, go for that. What are we as Klal Yisrael? We break. This is our daily life. Constantly we get in the seriousness. Do you know who? And there's another thing we're not going into tonight. Do you know who's the Koyach against Yavon? Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef and Yavon are the same gematria. What does Yosef HaTzadik represent? Someone who till today, when people read the story, say, how could that be? He lived alone in his own country, tempted by the most beautiful woman in the whole Egypt. That's the Koyach against Yavon. You go tell someone in Yavon that someone did that. Because I'll tell us that many years later, the Romans said there's no way he ever overcame that. They told Rabbi Akiva, can't be. That's us. We can break our teva. Yosef is our koyach, which is why we read about Yosef during these parashas. I want you to know something. Today, there was a levaya in Eretz Yisrael. A few 100,000 people. Rabbi Aaron Leib Steinman, I'm assuming most of you heard that he passed away. If you didn't hear, I'm sorry that you didn't hear. Because you should have heard. He was the Gadol HaDor. A man who's been leading Klal Yisrael for the last 20 or 30 years. He was 104 years old. And I'm not going to give you a hesped to him tonight. I'll just tell you one little Hanukkah story. A couple of years ago, Rabbi Sirotkin from Leiv La'achim brought a few Leiv La'achim boys that were in a kira of yeshiva to come meet Rav Steinman on Hanukkah. And Rav Steinman asked each boy, how are you? It's a man who was probably 100 at the time, if not in his high 90s. Every little boy came in. How are you? Little boys, little girls, I'm not sure what they brought him. Little children. And he looked at this little boy and he said, no, what's bothering you? The boy says, I have a problem, Rabbi. 10-year-old boy. The boy starts crying. And he says, I want to keep Torah and mitzvahs. My parents are not Shomer Shabbos. They have no clue. They turn on lights. They make me do this. The boy starts crying to Rav Steinman. He says, what's going to be? How am I supposed to do this? And Rav Steinman, the Zanchanaka, looks at him and he says, you know, I never understood. Ala Nisim, Ala Purkan, Ala Goysa, Ala Milchamais. What wars are we talking about? He says, I see that that war with Yavon is still going. And he told the boy, just like the Chashmai Noyim were able to overcome, you're going to have the power to overcome as well. Your parents don't know. Slowly they're going to learn. This was the chizuk he gave someone. And he told him that the battle is going to bring success. I had this chus about a year and two months ago. I was in Eretz Yisrael for my father's yard site. My Shai was with me and we went into Rav Steinman. And my brother took his kid, I took my son, we went into Rav Steinman. Rav Steinman was in a very good mood. And my brother turns to Rav Steinman and says, can I have a bracha for my son that Torah should be sweet? So Steinman, 103, looks at him and goes, it is! What do you need a bracha for? And he looked at him like he was so, but that's not what I wanted to show. Let me tell you what he told my brother. My brother says, can I have a bracha that it should be easy to raise children, that my children should raise easily? He says, no. What's the point? These are the words he told me. I heard it from his ear, from his mouth, my own ears. It was an incredible thing. He says, no. There's no cunts. It's supposed to be this way. No way out. This is what you're here for. So I was like, okay. And he looked out like, you're so disappointed. He thought for sure he's getting this. Okay, your kids are going to listen the first time you say something. Talk about Nisa, maybe. That's the only chance. Maybe you'll make a miracle for him. But this is Rav Steinman. And you need to realize the chizuk he gave people. But I want you to know, we talk about the Mesiras Nefesh. You know, sometimes I have the opportunity to talk to either to a wife or to a husband about people that are struggling with not learning and not davening. And you talk to people, and then I ask the fellow why he doesn't learn. He says, because, you know, at least this is his side of the story. I have to ask the wife if this is true. He says, you know, my wife, Shabbos morning is her morning in. She wants to sleep late. He walks in, and all will come late. So, and I'm sure if I ask the wife, she'll say, he doesn't want it. I'm sure there's another side. You have to listen to two sides of the story. But I think to myself, if that's true, that cool, of course we all want to sleep late. You have an assignment. You're going to say, I want him home and I'm not going to let... That's not breaking a teva. Because Baruch Hu wants to see us break our teva. I'll tell you something interesting. Rav Steinman wrote a sefer called Ayelas HaShachar. Okay? You know what it stands for? Aaron Yehuda Leib, it's his name. Originally the sefer was Ayel HaShachar. Before he went to print, he turned to his family and he says, you know, every single piece I wrote was on my wife's cheshbon. She let me go. How could I not put her name into it? And he changed the name to Ayeles HaShachar. His wife's name was Tamar. And his sefer today, one of the most used for him today, is Ayeles HaShachar. Aaron Yehuda Laban Tamar. And he said to the people, he says, my wife literally killed herself, so I should be able to write these for him. She's a partner. And again, the point over there was that we need to go the extra mile. I'm going to have to... Right? Okay, my wife's trying to be nice. Okay, she's not telling me. Okay, so I want to finish. I know it's late. We have babysitters. But I'm going to leave out some of my Mekayim. I'm going to get to the Maisa. This is the chizuk that we need. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready to respond with Nisim if we respond. There's a very famous story that traveled worldwide. All the kids' tapes have it. People who have tzaris go to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Now, Chaim Kanievsky tells them a very strange thing. He tells them, go to someone who's in the middle of a very bitter fight, and someone tells them something really nasty, and the person's about to respond back. This is very famous. And he says, go over to that person before that person responds and tell that person not to respond back. And if that person will not respond back and you get a bracha from that person, I promise you, you'll have a yeshua. Chaim Kanievsky tells people. There's a famous, not one, not ten, many, many stories. People have seen fight. They went over to one of the sides and says, please, please, hold off. And the person, well, one second, let me just tell her what I need to. No, please, stop. And during a bloody fight, people go over and they take brachas from these people. And I thought of it always as a cute thing. After I learned this Netziv, it made so much sense to me. What's Reb Chaim Kanievsky saying? What's Reb Chaim Kanievsky's power? His power is, what's his koyach? Is that he sits and breaks his nature a whole day. Learns, doesn't sleep, doesn't eat. That's it. What's he so special? You know what he told this person? It's not only me. I'm not better than anybody else. I am breaking, he didn't say this of course, but I'm telling you, he's saying, I have this koyach because I'm breaking my temptations, my desires for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Go over to a simple person who's in a temptation to scream back, respond back, and get a bracha from them. And these people were all helped. My Rav once told me over from, I think, the Chazon Ish, a person who's talking to men, but whatever it is, the challenge is relevant to all, that if a person has a desire to look at something and they control their desire, a person can daven at that moment for people for Yeshua. Like, and I also, all these things fall into the same theme. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, if we will go ahead. So to tie this all together, the Kaihanim taught us one thing, how to fight Yavan. Yavan comes in and says, give up hope for two reasons. Firstly, you're set. You're done. Secondly, God, they said that was their number one war, was that there's no intervention. Even if you agree God created the world, he left. He's busy. He has a lot of other things, so he's not dealing with this. Comes the Chashmonaim, and they say, we're 13 people, nothing's going to stop us. That was the greatest display of Emunah. Nothing could restrain us because we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Comes Hashem and says, okay, I'm going to confirm the other side. And they win a war in such a magnificent way. We're going to have to stop, but Be'ezer Hashem will have the opportunity other times. But if it's just we walk out of Chanukah with this one Netziv, I don't believe there's anyone in this room who doesn't need some sort of Yeshua, who doesn't need, whether it's their own family, their close friends, their family, who doesn't need Yeshua's today? Klai Yisrael, really, there are so many people that need so many things. And you wonder, who am I? You know, okay, when I'll be... The Gedolim, no! Did you ever think of taking upon yourself something that is an absolute difficulty against your nature? You struggle with any single thing that it may be. And I'm not going to give examples because I don't... You know, you always touch a raw nerve when you go that route. But we all have our nesiyanus. Perhaps to take these days of Hanukkah, take upon yourself something for someone who needs a Yeshua, and break it. We all, there's so many levels where a person could be mechazik ourselves, or our spouses, or our families to be better. And I think if we'll be mechazik ourselves in that way, we will be zeicher, as we finish off, we say the bracha, sha'asa nisim laviseinu. By Yom HaMahim, we should stop there. What do we say next? Zman hazeh. How do you have a right to say that? Very simple. When we light the menorah and we internalize the lesson that these people were not fazed by what was going on, So just like they were zeichet to bayam lahem, we have the same exact thing we can get today. We could have as manazah. And that's chus. That we remember, this is the secret of how we don't fall into the culture around us that's so down and so hopeless and so busy writing off. Forget it, this is not for you, that's not for you. There is nothing close to you. That's darkness, that's choshech. Menorah is R. R means you see everything in front of you. All the opportunities are wide open to you. And that's chus. We will be zeichet at harachamon, hu yaseh lanu nisim. All of us should be zeichet, to the tefillahs should be answered. And remember what the Sifrei Kodesh say, these are 8 days of nisim. We need to daven, push, and act, that we should zeichet to have them, b'yom mehem, as well as bizman hazeh.